Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. I'd like now to welcome Armando Espinosa and Craig Johnson. They're with the Metamorphosis Documentation Project. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
So this is not the first time we've had you on, but we are at a very exciting moment of your project, which is a multi-layered project of that basically has to do with really preserving and telling people about rituals, dances, and cultural things in Mexico. And this particular piece is about La Danza de la Pluma, which is both the name of your film and the name of the project. Tell us about, first of all, how the whole thing started.
This project actually started with an interest that we had in Armando in particular with La Danza de la Pluma, and a trip that we were involved in Oaxaca, where we saw the opportunity to be able to approach members of the community of Teotitlan del Valle and suggest this project to them, which we did. It's an indigenous community with a basically indigenous socialist type of government with committees that run everything. So we approached the...
Socialist committees. I suppose that works in a town, in a village of 400 people or something.
It's about 5,000.
All right.
But it does. It's annual elections, open, no parties, and they just decide who should have which post that will last from 1 to 3 years.
And you found this place and found they do this incredible dance, ritual dance.
Well, we knew about the Danza de la Pluma because Danza de la Pluma is part of a series of dances that are danced all throughout Latin America and here in New Mexico also and in southern United States that are bundled under the name of Danza de Conquista, conquest dances. The Danza de la Pluma in particular is very similar in content and in form sometimes with the Matachin dances that are performed here in New Mexico. So pursuing our interest of documenting public rituals, especially mestizo rituals of mixed culture, and doing the dance and having had documented Matachin dances here, and we had the opportunity to do this one and relate it to the Matachines, so we went for it.
You have the actual dancers coming to New Mexico.
Yes, that's really the probably final phase of this project, where we initially went down and documented the dance and interviewed dancers and community members and produced a documentary, which we went back with to give to the village and fixed up a permanent exhibit in their local community museum dedicated to the dance, presented them with that and with the rights to reproduce the documentary for sale exclusively in the museum for upkeep and improvement of the museum.
Nice.
And that was a great community event there. And then the last phase has been to come back and bring that cultural interchange back to the U.S., which last summer we participated in the Santa Fe Art Institute's lecture series where we talked about the project and showed the video, the documentary, and now the dancers themselves, through a string of fortunate events, are going to be here the next couple weekends presenting the dance in New Mexico.
And we will tell people more about the exact when and where's of that, but that's coming up this weekend and the following weekend in various places in New Mexico, including Santa Fe. So this dance is something that takes a lot of skill, preparation, spiritual development, physical stamina, and the ability to dance around for long periods of time with huge objects on your head.
Yep. Yeah, it's first of all, it's a pledge that dancers do to dance for the patron saint of the town and other important saints. It's not, they don't consider themselves folkloric dancers, but rather they consider it's a ritual dance.
So it's not something they do for tourists per se.
No,
it's something they do really as a devotion and an expression.
Right. And actually, this coming to Santa Fe, they don't charge any money for doing it. They see it as a way of promoting their village, as a way of also paying homage to their patron saint.
Who's their patron saint?
It's the sacred blood of Jesus Christ.
The precious blood of our Lord Jesus Christ.
Right, right.
It's the Sangre de Cristo.
But they do pledge to dance for 3 years, and during that time they form the group after they're accepted as being responsible enough to do that by the town authorities, and then choose a master of the dance who for the year before those 3 years teaches them 40-some dances that will tell this whole story of Moctezuma and Cortez. So they have to learn the steps to and the choreography for those 43 dances. And then during the 3 years they're dancing, they each have to sponsor one of their main community events. So it involves a lot of economic sacrifice on their part, as long as time and energy, and as you're saying, the marathon dances were. Where each Saint Day they end up dancing 5 hours the eve of, 8 hours the day of, and then repeat that a few days later.
A lot of dancing. Now, Danza de Conquista, Dances of Conquest, is the story of the conquest told from the indigenous point of view?
Well, not really. They follow a script that was written by the priests that first arrived in America, and it has evolved, but the priest realized right away how important these public performances were. They did not realize that these were rituals, because Danzas de Conquistas had happened in the Iberic Peninsula when they were conquering the Iberic Peninsula from the Moors. And in Spain, or in the Iberic Peninsula, because it was in Spain till afterwards, the Christian kingdoms had these dances that were sort of propaganda, and they were theater. They, along with religious theater, they complemented the liturgy. When it came to America, the priest imposed the dances and transformed the indigenous dances, but they didn't get that the indigenous dances were ritual, and that difference between theater and ritual allowed native people to have a second reading, an underground reading to the dances. So still they were playing the roles assigned to them as Cortes, Moctezuma, soldiers in the conquest of America, of the Aztecs in specific, and also the triumph of Christianity over paganism. But they didn't, you know, underneath it all, the indigenous people still were paying homage to all the nature cycles and things they had always paid homage to.
And just hiding it.
And just not talking about it.
And they, at the same time, which that they do have to, as you say, sort of hide it, at the time they did, even now, there's not that, it's sort of a duality in the way that they look. They do consider themselves Christian, and they still believe in a lot of the previous forces and gods. It's not an either-or situation.
Well, the thing that developed along with new art styles and art movement was a native Christianity, a native way of looking at Christianity. And, for example, you go to any church in Latin America and you see people talking out loud to the images, which is, you know, something they did to their images. And Christians in Europe don't really do it.
Not much. It is interesting that there are people whose cultural flexibility includes being able to really embrace multiple religions at the same time, which people who are maybe of a more fundamentalist stripe would say, you can't do that, you have to choose one or the other.
Well, it's that's a great observation, because that's the other point, that all these cultures in America were really polytheistic. When conquest and submission was normal, you know, one region took over another region, but they never really imposed their gods. Maybe they said, oh, you have to pay homage to this other deity too, but they didn't eradicate the rest of the deities those people believed in. So adding a Christian god wasn't really that much trouble for native people.
Now, the amount of time that the dancers dance during the Danza de la Pluma, is it the same time every year?
It basically
usually
is. For the main saints' days, It's an average because it really depends on if, you know, if anything gets stretched out within the dancing time frame. But they dance on the víspera, or the eve of the patron saint's day.
Oh, okay.
And that's in more of an afternoon to into the evening, probably about 4 o'clock till 9 o'clock, roughly, after a noon mass. And then in the on the actual day of the patron saint, they'll start in the morning and go to late afternoon. It's roughly 8 hours that they dance.
And there. That's in July. Actually, they were dancing day before yesterday. Was their last dance of the 4 days they dance.
For the main saints' days, they do the eve of and the day of, which in this time was a Wednesday for the main day. They have a day of rest. They have another day where they do a ceremonial parading. And then for Saturday and Sunday, it's two more full days of dancing.
So here we are in the world of short attention spans, and you're going to be actually expecting people to sit through five-hour performances?
No, they're only going to dance. The maximum they're going to dance is 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
They're also not too used to dry heat.
Right.
So we
really right, because it's Oaxaca, which is more which is more humid and jungle.
Yeah, we don't want them to faint.
But what they've done here, when we went down and helped to record a good quality recording of the band that they usually play with, because we couldn't bring the band up, they chose within the dancers and the master of the dance the specific dances that they wanted to do in this shortened version, so that they still would be pretty much telling the story, or at least a shortened version of it, and having the main, what they consider the main important dances included. So it'll be a condensed version, but there still will be some continuity to the whole presentation.
We're talking to Armando Espinosa and Craig Johnson of the Metamorphosis Documentation Project and Danza de la Pluma, which will be here this weekend at Rancho de las Golondrinas at 11 o'clock this Saturday morning, July 18th, and then at Plaza Contenta and Tierra Contenta at 6005 Jaguar Drive this coming Sunday at 1 in the afternoon. And then there's also some events the following weekend at the National Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque and at El Camino Real International Heritage Center in Socorro. That's next weekend, the 25th and 26th, Saturday and Sunday of July. So have you made it sounds like you've made some links in terms of what these dances are about, but have you actually made the personal introductions between the dancers of Danza de la Pluma and some of the Native American Indians who do dances in this region?
No, we haven't had time, and we really would love to see Native people coming to see them, and we are going to take them to some of the pueblos, but they have seen recordings we have made of matachines here in New Mexico, our Zapotec friends in Oaxaca. So, and they, you know, and we've talked extensively about it, but no, we haven't been able. It's been very hard to coordinate all this.
It would be so interesting to see how they responded to each other's dances and what the similarities were and what the differences were.
Well, that's hopefully, maybe that'll be an
annex
to the project. But
yeah.
So far, it's been, you know. Also, this project we've done with hardly any money, and only two people doing it. There's not a big production behind it, so it's been kind of hard. This phase of bringing the dancers is we have had support from especially the Mexican consulate, from Aeromexico, and from the Mexican community here in Santa Fe.
And particularly the Santa Fe Art Institute, the McCune Foundation, the Center of Southwest Culture, have all been generous. And then we've really tried to get local support and do a community event. The whole purpose of it being in Tierra Contenta is to help to develop community in that area, that newer area of town.
And that's a free event at Plaza Contenta.
It is free. It's a family day event. And we look specifically for local sponsors. Our local businesses, and they've responded very generously, and we're very happy with that aspect of the project, so that we've gotten monetary support from them, food for the dancers, and they've become excited about the event being there, so we're really looking forward to that part of it.
It seems that in addition to being a storytelling event and a spiritual, religious phenomenon, the Danza de la Pluma is also a community building thing, because everybody is involved in one way or another.
Well, yeah, you know, many people ask, what's the meaning of the dance? What's the meaning of this object or that object? And I truly don't believe that's even necessary to know that it's really not important. What is important is that through the sacrifice, that the community can identify with the sacrifice those dancers are doing. And in that identification, it creates a communion that eventually brings a good fortune and well-being, which is ultimately the reason why the dancers are dancing, is to create well-being. And in that communion of the community, maybe stoically participating in the dance, it's when all that community happens.
There's also some real healing that happens. There was one story in the film of people who had real illnesses. One was an old man when you filmed him who was just at death's door, and he got the message that he was supposed to dance, and he got better and things like that.
And that the story was referring way back to when he was probably in his mid-30s.
Right.
But that's true. And there was actually another older man also that we interviewed who had a similar story, but not quite death's door, it was really his knee. But they do believe that, and they were one of the reasons that the dancers will dance, and others have stated it, as if they or a particular family member do have that type of a health problem that they want to dedicate their dancing to.
Now, for you as a medical doctor, what do you think about all that?
I think we discussed this a little bit last time too, but I think that there's a traditional sense in this culture of a disconnect between mind and body. And I believe there really isn't. And that just as your mind is affected if you're overly tired or if you're ill in other ways, vice versa also. So that I don't think you can discount things. I wouldn't look at them as miracles, but I don't think that you can discount the possibilities of a mindset and a belief affecting your physical health also.
Especially here in Santa Fe. So we're talking about Danza de las Plumas and the film that you made, the very nice half-hour documentary film, is going to be screening. When will it be here?
It will be here at each of the events. Most of them it will be before the event. In one in particular at Rancho de los Golondrinos, they decided that it would be better served in their environment afterwards. But in general, it will be here to introduce the public to some of the motivations and the culture, the history behind the dance before they actually see them dancing. So it'll be just before.
So your group, Metamorphosis Documentation Project, has been doing all sorts of things, and this is the final phase of this particular Danza de la Pluma, getting these wonderful people up here from Mexico to do the dance this weekend and next weekend. What other kinds of projects have you done, and are you looking forward to?
Well, we've done projects in plain documentation without getting the community involvement. We've done a lot. For 10 years we've been doing it in Bolivia, in Ecuador, in Mexico, here in New Mexico, and we have documented Matachin dances, a few of them here in New Mexico, for some were used for art pieces before all this became because at the beginning we were just documenting, but it felt like we weren't giving back, that there was lacking the reciprocity that is so important in Native communities. And since we were documenting mestizo dances, we thought it would be very important to add a reciprocity aspect to our project. And that's how this project started developing, where we would give back to the community, not only take it away as artifacts, as cultural artifacts,
right,
but to give it back to them so that what we consider a cultural artifact can be a tool for the preservation of their own culture and use for their benefit, even economically, like in this project.
In some of the earlier projects down in, particularly in Copper Canyon and La Barranca del Cobre, we were the Tarahumara or Rarámuris, we were in very isolated communities, small communities where there was no electricity. And when we first started that aspect of the project in one of those, we came back like a month later to bring back and do a photography exhibit for them, give them photographs to all the people that had been photographed, and to show them the documentary that resulted from the dances. These were Easter week dances rather than Matachin dances. And we had to bring, with our four-wheel drive, get down into the bottom of the canyon and bring a generator along in order to actually show the movie on the outside wall of the church.
Right.
It was a great experience, and everyone really loved
and
it.
That was a particularly intense experience because they had never seen themselves as spectators of their own ritual.
Right.
So their reactions, the things they told us afterwards was very telling on how important it was to bring it all back.
Well, all of this and much, much more you can witness this weekend here in Santa Fe, New Mexico, El Rancho de las Golondrinas, on Saturday morning at 11 o'clock, and then on Sunday at Plaza in Tierra Contenta at 6005 Jaguar Drive, and then at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then on the following weekend, Saturday at the National Hispanic Cultural Center, and Sunday at El Camino Real International Heritage Center. And for more information, you can also go to the Metamorphosis Documentation Project.com. And Metamorphosis is spelled with an F rather than a PH, which is the
Spanish
spelling. Craig Johnson and Armando Espinosa, thank you both so much for being here with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much, Misha.